Welcome to the Forging Honor podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at The Forge, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing weekly challenges to build character through action. We are by no means experts, just two young Christian men trying to make sense of a wild world.
That's right. We do our best to learn and hope you'll join us on the journey. And if you want to get directly involved, go to forginghonor.com to find information on how to join our community.
This is episode 24, Slow Improvements.
All right, challenge wrap-up time. As a reminder, challenges last for 10 days. That is Monday through Friday for 2 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. This previous challenge was not as simple as we had hoped it might be, and yet here it is. We are coming off some time of talking about craft and what it means to grow and develop our craft. So you're saying take some time each day to work on your craft, like 10 to 15 minutes, and then get feedback from someone else or something else, some way to find feedback. So I did, depending on how you count, 3, maybe 5 days. I'll clarify that later. Banjo, how'd you do?
I wasn't much better. I had a grand total of 6 days. This is probably, I'm trying to think if there's a worse challenge that I've hit. This felt like my lowest performance of any I've done.
Still better than my lowest performance of a measly 3. Or maybe it was 2 at one point. I've had some rough ones.
Yeah. And yet we soldier on.
We're getting better.
But I thought the whole thing was interesting to me about why it was so challenging, because I didn't think this was going to be a tough challenge.
Right.
So you had 3 to 5.
I say that because I missed the raw get feedback part, or immediate feedback. I did some coding days and I did some poetry days. The coding ones are easy because if you do one of those little online coding challenges, like, I don't know if you've heard of, like, there's Advent of Code or there's other things out there.
Oh, I just read so much coding material that,
in depth with it. Anyway, so those can be fun to sit and do for a little bit. And those can take a little longer than that 15 minute mark, but you either get it done or you don't, right? So you have immediate feedback and you can go, and then on YouTube, you can see, here's how people have done this challenge before, and here's where you might have gone wrong, right? So it wasn't immediate personal feedback, but it was immediate feedback. So I counted that. But I sat down and worked on some poetry with the intention of immediately getting feedback, and never got that feedback at various points. Although we did get some done last night, so that was good.
You should have just sent him to me, JJ.
I should have just sent it directly to you. I didn't. I just simply did not type it up and send it to you. So anyway, that's how I have that question mark number.
Did you have, aside from the time that we talked last night, did you have any instances where you like sat down across from somebody and they were like, here's what I think of what you're doing?
No.
No? Okay.
That was different. And that was a huge piece of the spirit of the challenge. And I completely was not able to get to that.
You just didn't get, well, yeah. Well, you're the particular way in which you work, especially in the coding world, is so I don't know how it works, but it seems like it's very far away from that. Mm-hmm. Where you know, it's so logical that when you're checking a mistake, it's like, you know, you can just kind of, oh, I see you. It's almost like the computer is giving you feedback, you know, and
right.
But it's a little bit different than like a performance review, you know, if you've ever had one of those. So.
Well, and there is something subjective. There are some objective aspects to code. So in my job, I give feedback and I'm given feedback on my code. Mm-hmm. Things, how clean it is, how does it look, that kind of thing. We do what are called engineering reviews. And those will last like an hour over something that you've worked on. Those are not common. It's not even a weekly occurrence. But it's something that I do very regularly. So in that sense, like if you want to count my day-to-day job, yes, I was sitting and doing that a couple of times over this last period. But you're exactly right. It's something, the human element is somewhat subjective. Especially as we have better and better ways of checking code. I don't know if you're familiar, GitHub has put out some AI tools lately. I don't know if you're familiar with GitHub at all or what.
0%. This is the first time I've heard those words next to each other in that order.
Okay, so GitHub is a tool used by programmers to store code, track code, and it's powered on Git. So Git is this, it's not that even that new of a tool, it's an older tool, but it's just a way of tracking anything anyone has ever done to some code.
Okay.
And so using that tool, if you have multiple developers on a project, you can see who's done what. So anyway, GitHub, the company, which utilizes Git, has put out some AI tools that are shockingly good at working in code and very good at giving you immediate feedback while you're coding, before you've even run the program.
Oh, wow.
Which is very, very impressive. So all that to say, yeah, there's the feedback world of code is different than the feedback world of poetry. I honestly enjoyed, though, the face-to-face feedback I got with you that one time we did it together over the poetry than I did more with the code. I think it would have been better for me to have been more intentional about that, because that would have taken me away from, like, it felt like I was going from I'm working on this thing to now I'm going to work. Right. They're the same thing in some ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you do almost entirely poetry, or did you do anything else?
No, I did some poetry. My wife plays guitar much, 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 much better than I do. And I'm still trying to figure out my guitar a little bit. So she taught me some things, which was helpful. And then, at work, I was getting some feedback on some teaching and looking to improve. We just finished our first quarter. I gave the kids their grades back. I got my grade back, and working towards making some improvements there. So those are all different. And the main thing is just like, I don't like feedback. It's not enjoyable for me. I can't think of a time where it's like, I really enjoy receiving feedback. And maybe like, I think this is one of those areas where I'm like, I really got to grow. Really. This is an unsanctified portion of myself, I'll say, where I just don't like receiving that feedback. I think I take it. I don't know how you take feedback, personal feedback, but negative comments, it's really hard for me not to just like slap that up as a value onto myself. Like, it's not the work, it's me. Like, there's not something wrong with what I'm doing. It's me, myself has the issue, you know? Which is, it's something I got to get out of, because when you have that mindset, it's just really hard to do anything, you know. Like, I've only learned like the three songs on my guitar,
right?
Because I'm unwilling to be taught to go farther than that.
Interesting. Yeah, I think at one point I definitely took feedback very negatively. For me, at this point, though, it's a lot about the person that's giving me that feedback.
Yeah.
So if I respect their opinion, and if I respect what they have to say on that subject, I generally find I can take that feedback a little better. And someone who gives feedback well is very good at using language that separates the action or the product that they're talking about from the person that has produced it. Right.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't, I shouldn't say that completely separates them, right? Separating the artist from his work is not necessarily the best idea, but separates it in a way that this is not a personal attack on you.
Right.
This is me critiquing something that you want to improve. So if you want to improve, here are some ways I can help you with that.
Can you think of like a piece of feedback that somebody gave you that was really helpful, either negative or positive? Not necessarily this week, just like in your life.
That's fair. I would say a lot of the best feedback I got, I was in the Boy Scouts. And in that time, if you are progressing regularly, you're getting what are called boards of reviews. And you're also getting some one-on-one time with an adult leader who is going to give you feedback as kind of as a mentor situation. On top of that, if you're in a leadership role, adults will quickly give you feedback because you have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
So I was in a leadership role, and I was what was called the senior patrol leader, meaning I was running meetings, I was planning trips. I was helping organize other patrols doing their trips, et cetera. And there's a lot that goes into that. So if you drop the ball, you know, it's kind of a, you've dropped the ball for the whole troop. And our troop was like 70 kids.
Well,
70 young men. So I, in my first couple of weeks, very quickly got a lot of feedback on that particular leadership role. Now, they don't throw you into that leadership role, right, without you being somewhat prepared. So at that point, I've been in scouts for a long time. I, in theory, knew what was going on. But there was still a lot that I had to work on, right? That's kind of the point of the leadership role as well, is learning how to take responsibility. So I got a lot of feedback there and good pieces of advice. So for example, I had, at one point, I'd messed up and I had, I can't even remember exactly what I did. It's good that it doesn't stick with me in that way, but I'd messed up as the leader. And when one of the adults asked me what went wrong, I started giving excuses for why I hadn't got, I think I hadn't gotten something done on time. We'd missed a deadline or something. And like, he just said, "Jonathan, stop, never give excuses." Right? Don't give excuses. And he didn't say, "Jonathan, you're the kind of person that always gives excuses. Like, how dare you?" He just said, "Don't give excuses." And then just moved on. Like, there was no, it was really, really helpful for me because I went, okay, yes, I was doing that. I don't have to. I can adjust the conversation now. He was the kind of person who just could immediately say, "All right, let's start this conversation over and let's work on this."
Right.
He was very, he was clearly a part of the troop to improve young men.
Right.
And I really, I, that piece of advice has stuck with me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's one example that comes to mind in terms of like kind of those soft skills. When it comes to some of the hard skills that I've learned over the years, whether it's coding or even like even learning some of the literature stuff that we really enjoy together, I think those are areas where the advice can seem a lot more subjective.
Right.
Or the, well, depends. I don't know. I don't want to go too far that way. Let, before I go off on a total tangent, what about you, Banjo?
No, I like that feedback of like the, you know, don't make excuses in the way of, yeah, you're not, it's not, oh, you know, it's not even something like weak men make excuses, right? Like, it's not like putting a label on that. It's just like, don't do it. You know, it's just clear cut. Don't do that, which is good. I got a lot of good advice and good feedback from a, particularly from a youth pastor that I worked for, a couple of years ago, three or four summers now. And he was just a super intentional guy. A phenomenal person at recognizing patterns. I mean, you just could if you put six people in a room and let him watch the people in 6 minutes, he would know every dynamic that was working within that group.
Interesting.
He was so quick at recognizing these things. It made him maddeningly difficult to play board games with, because immediately he would see like everything that was going on the board. Like, it would just take him like 1 minute and he would know how to win the game. Very frustrating. But it was a super helpful trait to have when teaching people how to interact with people. And the main piece of feedback that I got from him was like, be intentional. Like, why are we doing this thing? Why are we doing this thing? And so every time we would have like a Bible study, he'd be like, "Love it. Why are we doing it?" And he was looking, it didn't need to be like, you know, a whole philosophy. It just needed to be, look, is there a reason that you're doing it, or are we doing it just to do it?
Right. Right.
And then,
that's very important.
And then on the, kind of like on the underside of that, it was always one of the great pieces of feedback I got from him is I think he listened to me lead a Bible study once, or he heard me give a talk or something like that. And then he was like, okay, so you need to be able to give a lesson that fits to both people who have been in the church for their entire life and for people who walked in the door today. Like, how do you do that? That's where you need to be. Because my tendency is to give like the OPC, Reformed Presbyterian, we're going to reference the Westminster Standards. And
it's going to be an hour and a half long.
That's Well, we're a good Presbyterian. It better be an hour and a half long, and we're going to have a committee.
And there's going to be 3 points to every point somehow.
That's right. And they're all alliterative. Don't forget that.
Always alliterative. Always alliterative. That always cracks me up.
Yeah. But he was like, look, that's all good. But if you're tossing words around like sanctification and justification to kids who barely know who Jesus is, like, that's not helpful. You know, it's not useful to them. So how do you balance those two things? And I think one of the great things about feedback, really good feedback, is, you know, like we've been saying, it's not an attack on you, the person, but it's telling the person kindly, look at the world a little bit differently. Like you're not, because we get so narrowly focused in on things, and feedback is so much about like, okay, so you're seeing the world like this. You need to see the world a little bit more openly than that. And I don't think it's even necessarily like, see the world the way I see it.
Right, right.
I think that's bad feedback. Like bad feedback is the kind that's like, yeah, everyone needs to look like me, and then we will all be happy.
Right.
But good feedback is like, look, you're just missing this perspective. You're missing this angle on it. I don't know. That's an off the top of the head theory.
That makes sense. Well, and critiquing the action or the product over the person, again, can separate that emotion from the person, allow them to take that feedback. At least I find that to be the way for me. So I was thinking back in high school, I had a wonderful English and history teacher. He kind of taught both sides. And at one point in the year, it was the, you know, we're going to work on poetry now, right? In our literature progression. And I remember the first couple of poems I submitted to him, he did not critique any of the content. He only critiqued like the meter, the rhyme scheme, that kind of stuff. Right. And it wasn't until later that he started critiquing, hey, this idea doesn't really make as much sense here. This verse would be better placed before, you know, things like that, where the content started to get critiqued. But at first he was just laying that groundwork of like, okay, you want to write a sonnet? I don't even care what it's about. It can be about literally anything.
Just follow the rules.
Just make sure you follow these rules. And I wrote what were probably some pretty terrible sonnets in terms of their content. But by the end, I had the rules down, right? So I knew how a sonnet worked. And then it was, you know, later on, he was able to say, all right, now we're going to make a decent sonnet, right? It's not going to be a Shakespeare sonnet, but it's going to be decent, a little better than before. But you got the rules down. And in that process, you know, never once did he say, Jonathan, you're a terrible poet.
Right.
Right. And that was, but he was able to say, you've made this mistake here. Let's fix that. Right. Let's tweak that.
Well, okay, so we can cut this out as we like, but here's my pitch for the next 10, 15 minutes is that we give each other feedback on how we do as podcasters on air.
Oh, live on air.
Live on air feedback. You know, practice what we preach.
I would like to try that. I need to come up with something scathing to say about you. I kid.
Well, you've given me feedback off air that's been helpful, and other people have as well, and that's good. And now we just do it, and we just draw the curtain and imagine the show is over, and now we've gotten to the end, and now JJ, how did you think that episode? How did you think that episode?
Right, right. I definitely, let's dig into this, and let's add some rules. I think one thing I want to hit on is not just as generally as podcasters, but kind of give critiques on how we do this podcast specifically.
This podcast specifically.
Because I have, I think, critiques for, you could work on your voice in this way or just whatever dumb stuff. But when it comes to like practicing what we preach on Forging Honor, like, I mean, immediate piece of feedback for me is I think I've completed all 10 days of a challenge once. Like, I don't commit myself to some of the time apart from the on air.
You're taking my feedback, man. You can't take my feedback.
Hey, okay. I'm sorry. Immediately jumping to my own my own feedback. All right. You feedback Let's jump into me. It. Let's jump into it. Take like only a few minutes each. Let's try not to go for too long here. But Banjo, it was your idea. You could go first.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I had the idea and now my wheels are spinning. Well, first and foremost, any piece of feedback I give is prelimbed by this. I really enjoyed doing this podcast with you. This was your brainchild, and I appreciate you bringing me into it. And I enjoy the experience. And I think you do a good job of like coming up with some of these like really good frameworks for us to have like discussions in. So like, you know, we have the podcast, which is really helpful, and getting to talk on there, and then being on the Discord, which is great. And then we've got our website as well. I think probably my biggest feedback as a critique would be like, you know, you're an excellent salesman in the area of sell the sizzle, not the steak, but every once in a while we need more steak. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
I'm not sure I know what you mean when it comes to the podcast. What do you mean by that? I haven't heard that expression. I like that expression.
Oh, you never heard that?
No.
Yeah. Don't sell the steak. Sell the sizzle.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you don't sell all the quality of the meat and the protein and all that. It's like you hear the sound when it goes on the cast iron skillet. That's what you're selling. That's what you're putting out into the world. Flipping it, you know, on like, we've got an amazing logo. We've got an amazing production quality. We got a great looking website. We've got all the sizzle in the world. But I think one thing that we could probably both work on is more steak, you know, like,
right.
There's more things that we could put out onto the website. That's as much me as you, you know, or there's like maybe more, you know, maybe there's just more meat. I think we could put on the bones.
I think that's good. I like that. I'll work on putting some meat on these bones. All right. Banjo, I also have really enjoyed doing this with you. I'm really glad that we get to do this together. We've talked about doing something like this for a while, and yeah, it's a ton of fun. So you, I think your greatest, in my opinion, like one of the greatest things about you is also one of the things that contributes at moments to some dead air on the show a little bit. So that would be my feedback. So what I mean by that is you're very inclined to go into, you want to talk about whatever the pet subject is of that week.
Yes.
Whatever you've been thinking about. And it doesn't matter what the content of the that particular episode was meant to be. You want to talk about what you've been thinking about, which I totally understand and get because I'm that way. I think sometimes what that ends up doing is we go on these long journeys away from the subject, and then we have to figure out how to rein it back in, which is fine. But like it I was listening back to some episodes and like, that happens a lot.
It does.
Where we do that. And I'm guilty of this too, but I think that's kind of my thing when I think if we were to produce a tighter episode, as it were, that would be one area where we would need to work on both of us. So
we got to prune those hedges a little bit.
A little bit.
All right. Yeah. No, that's good. That makes sense. Feedback registered.
Yeah. There's some feedback.
Should we feedback our audience?
Feedback
our listeners.
Wait, how do we feedback people? we don't see them. We don't hear them.
No, but we do appreciate them. We do appreciate our listeners and that they're doing this with us. I feel like every podcast says this, but we're just out here talking and we enjoy it and we're, you know, baffled if anybody wants to listen along, but you know, that's fun for us. So
baffled if anyone wants to listen to you, Banjo. Oh, come on.
I'm baffled on that front. Trust me. I teach kids for a living. I'm amazed if any of them are not glazed over. No, but we do appreciate our listeners and we'd appreciate it if you would subscribe and give us a rating and bring other people into the forging on a journey.
All the things.
That's feedback.
All the things. There we go.
Yeah. So how did you feel when I gave you feedback? Like, what was that?
Are you asking for feedback about your feedback?
Is that what it sounds like? This is a little meta, but yeah, I guess so. Or just a further conversation about feedback. How does feedback work? And I'm trying to understand why I don't like feedback.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Fair. For me, you told me about, you want a little more steak and the episodes and on the website, et cetera. I see that as, okay, well, you did a good job of first saying, like, here's what you're doing well, right? Yeah. Here's this area you're doing well. So that's great. Now let's take it and let's work on this next thing, right? Yeah. So you give a new objective, and that works out very well for someone like me who, okay, yeah, I think I'm doing well in certain areas. Okay, you've confirmed that. And I know I'm not doing well in other areas, and you've confirmed that, but you haven't done just one or the other, right? You've been able to say, here's an area, now here's a new area to improve. And I'm the type of person who, if I see something to improve on, right, I see that. I don't see that as a like moral problem or moral failing in some way. I see that as a problem to be solved, or as a math problem that needs a solution. Right. So we're going to go and we're going to figure it out.
Mission objective.
So I think that's why most of the time I can take feedback pretty well. If someone just comes at me and yells at me, wow, you're a terrible podcaster, you're terrible at this, blah, 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 I just discount that entirely, because they're clearly coming from a place of emotion or from a place of they don't like me for whatever reason. And
bitten by a podcast as a small child, something like that.
Something like that. I don't have to listen to that. Right. They're not giving me anything to work on. So that's a key piece. Good feedback gives you something to work on.
Yeah. In my mind. No, that's true. That's true.
So anyway, does that help you kind of figure out, like, is there a piece of that you think you might miss? And most times you're getting feedback.
There was one time, I'm trying to think of what this was. I think there was one time I submitted an article, or I submitted a piece of writing to either to a website or to a newspaper or something like that. And which, you know, being someone who wants to be a writer, that's like a constant place of, I actually wish I had more feedback in that area, because I'm constantly sending out my writing and I'm constantly getting no feedback. It's just, we regret to inform you that we're not going to take your piece. Hope you find luck elsewhere. And it's like, well, that's not helpful to me. That's just rejection. That just hurts.
Right. Right.
But this one time I sent this article somewhere, or this essay or something like that. And I got this piece of feedback that, the first thing it said was, we really wish we could write, we really wish we could put this, in our piece. Unfortunately, it's missing these. And it like listed a whole bunch of things that I did wrong. And then I showed it to my dad and I was like, look, they wanted to put this in their article. And my dad was like, that's the one thing you got out of that.
You didn't see the list of things that you need to improve on.
That's right. He was like, you're the one person who could take that and find the silver lining. And like, sometimes I think that's a strength, where it's like, you know, if you're in a place where you're constantly getting beat down, and you're trying to improve, like, you need to hold on to that optimism a little bit. You need to hold on to that, like, no, I can do it. I can find the one thing that I did well. But obviously you need to like also take the criticism, take the feedback, and actually like make some adjustments, you know? What's funny about when you gave me the feedback is I felt it. Like, as soon as you started to switch into like, let me give you some criticism. Like, first, you led up to it with some nice things, but as you're leading up to it with the nice things, I was like, oh, wait a minute, there's a downside coming. Like,
there's something happening here.
That's not good. And I felt it in my chest. I was like, oh, and it was almost like a fight or flight response.
Wow.
It wasn't that strong, but it was like, and then you gave the criticism, and my first instinct was to explain it. And my first instinct was to be like, this is why I do that. And I had to fight it and be like, wait, no, listen to what he's saying and find out how you can improve, because otherwise, like, yeah, you're not gonna, nothing's gonna change, and you're just gonna keep making the same mistake, which is the definition of insanity.
Interesting. It's so interesting that your first instinct is, here's, you want to explain why you did that? Because I'm thinking and realizing I definitely have done that before. But I wonder if it's certain, like, are there things that are closer to me, like I'm more tied to them emotionally, so I feel the need to explain myself more? Or it goes back to that piece of advice of, you know, don't give excuses. Like, like even about myself, like, I don't want to.
Like, I find it
giving, but is there a difference between explanation and excuse? I tend to lean towards, if I have to explain myself, I'm just giving excuses.
Right. I find it has to do with the person who's giving the feedback. Like, I think if I respect the, or if I think there's like two elements to it. If I really love and care about the person, I don't want them to think I'm an idiot. And Fair. So I want to explain why I'm doing the thing I'm doing.
See, that's the funny bit. Everyone I love and care about knows I'm an idiot. So it's already cat's out of the bag.
Well, I didn't want to put that in my feedback, but.
I appreciate it, Banjo. being somewhat nice on air.
On air, anyway. but then there's also, like, you know, if someone who I don't really think is good at their job gives me feedback, then it's very difficult for me to, like, take that feedback seriously.
Oh, 100%.
You know,
if someone gives me feedback about something about which they know nothing, I'm like, I'm not taking your feedback. Yeah. You know, you don't know anything about this.
Yeah. But then it's funny because sometimes someone else who I do respect and who does have like the qualifications gives me feedback, and they might give me really similar feedback. Like it might be on the same level or like on the same like train of thought. But one person gives me the feedback in one way and one person gives me the feedback in another way. And I really hear the second one. I hear when you're like a professional at what you do and like, you know, the thing, and I'm like,
right.
Oh, let me hear you out on that. Let me understand that. Whereas if somebody is just like, if I feel like they're just like talking to prove to me that they know their subject and they're talking down to me, and they're like, you don't know these things, so I'm going to give you this information because you wouldn't have come to it on your own, you know,
right,
versus
right.
like a professional who is like, hi, let me give you some helpful advice that I needed to get to where I am.
Right.
Like where it's bringing you up is so different from like, you're down there and I'm up here and you're never going to catch up, but you better know this anyway. You know what I mean?
Right, right. That is something that goes back to our conversation about experts a little bit. And I think that's one of the key things. An expert who is truly an expert who truly understands their subject will also understand what it takes to get there.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to give that kind of feedback.
And they want people to reach that level, I think.
That's interesting. Huh.
Like, I think one of the things that like a real expert and a real, I'll say professional does is they're you know, like the really terrible people are like, here's my thing, I don't want anyone near my thing, like let me draw a big old line in the sand,
right,
and build walls, and I'm the expert and everyone else is on the other side of it. You know, it's probably like one of those existential things where like, I'm the car guy, I need to know about cars, and I'm the only one who knows about cars, and now I need to like push off everybody else who claims to know cars because I'm the car guy. You know,
I think about this with like board games, card games, that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
I think, something as simple and complex as chess, right?
Right.
Which at its core is not a quote unquote difficult game, but it's difficult to master. And it's one of those games where I think there are players out there, I've encountered players who they never want to talk about the strategy. They never want to talk about what they're doing. But those players never really progress, right?
Right.
They figured something out at some point. They figured out how to beat their small group of people. And then in order to keep that continuing to happen, they just never revealed their secrets.
Right.
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 I think an expert knows in order for you to improve, you now need to let the other players know those things so you can figure out how to beat them.
right,
all over again. And it becomes a pattern. So you're only going to improve as long as you are meeting the next level, right?
And you're only getting better in as much as the people around you are getting better. And then you're actually improving at your craft. So like an expert, you know, isn't trying to defend the ivory tower. They're actually like trying to get the information out of the tower. Like they're trying to get the information out of the castle so that everybody else can participate. And like the writers that I've seen who I really admire and appreciate are the ones who are, they're not sequestered away on some island typing away. They're like, well, you know, let me come out and talk to you about these things. And like, here's some things I wish I knew, you know, when I was starting out.
Right.
I'm fascinated by comedians and the way that they talk about their craft. And just comedians are constantly getting together in these groups and talking about how their jokes work. And they're constantly in this place of like, can I use that? Can I, like, you use this bit? Can I steal that? Because that's a great bit.
Interesting.
You know, and there's like this constant like plagiarism that's going on like mutually from everybody. And I think it's so interesting that they're not, you know, the great comics aren't like, get away from me, you unclean, unfunny plebeian. It's like, here, let me help you out. Here's a joke. This is how this works, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, well, and you would think, yeah, if you're at the top of your game. Well, I should clarify it. In some forms of game or in some fields of expertise, there is a little bit of that going on where you don't want other people to know what you are capable of or what you have available to you. Like military is this way, right?
Right.
The best experts in the military, you don't want to leak those secrets.
No, you want to give like false information.
Exactly. And I sometimes wonder in the world of business that that's a huge thing for me. Like if you're learning from a business person, are they teaching you because they want to see you succeed or are they teaching you because they want to make money?
Right.
I mean, it could be both. Like ideally those interests are aligned, right? But are there certain areas where that doesn't align? I don't know. It's just a question to consider when you're taking advice from someone that is successful.
Yeah. The other thing, just briefly while I'm thinking about it, the other thing about comedians is part of the reason I was thinking about that this week, because this is connected. I'm not trying to start another rabbit trail.
He's going on his little tangent, his little pet project over here.
But it's comedians that get immediate feedback constantly. Like if you tell a joke.
Like from the audience, you mean?
Like from the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like I can't think of another profession that's quite like that, where you get up and you're doing your material and as soon as it leaves your mouth, you're getting feedback. Mm. Was it funny or was it not? You know, and so you have to be if you're on stage as a comedian, you're in a constant state of like feedback and try again, like receiving information, go again.
Right.
I think that's really interesting. I couldn't think of another profession that was quite like that.
Well, I mean, Jordan Peterson talks about that. Like on the lecture circuit, it's that way, but the feedback looks different, right? The feedback is the crowd goes from kind of wrestling and sort of paying attention to suddenly everyone's just in the zone watching you, listening. And that's the kind of feedback you might get in a lecture room. I think there are other areas where you can get immediate feedback.
I mean, as a teacher, I get immediate feedback when I say, we're going to have homework. That's an immediate.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But it's not useful feedback. I can't do anything with that information.
Right, right. Not most give them the homework. I mean, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. And well, and that's the thing is sometimes if you're giving feedback to someone, so kind of flipping it from the receiving end now to the giving end, if you are giving feedback to someone and are like, you have to identify sometimes, are they the type of person that's capable of taking this feedback? Right. What's the end goal of this feedback?
Yeah.
If I'm giving you some free information because I saw something in you, in theory, I want that to be for your benefit. But if it's, you know, your students giving you feedback about their distaste for homework, like you can recognize as the teacher, well, that's pointless. That's not coming from a spirit of trying to help the teacher improve his teaching, right?
Yeah. That's the funny thing about a teacher and a student. You have two you know, ideally you're headed towards the same goal. You're both trying to learn, but that's only in some like, that only comes true in like a Marxist world where we haven't taken right. into consideration like, you know, free will and human beings and that sort of thing. And
I think
and
there are a few teacher
gravity.
There are a few teacher student relationships where that starts to, like, but that requires a voluntary submission in that sense.
Right.
Like you really see that maybe at the college level. You start to see it at like, I think the place you see it the most is probably like the master's, the PhD level.
Yeah, where it, when you've reached a level of like I'm choosing to learn. Like I'm choosing to come here to learn. That's where you get it. You can get that at the high school level. You can get that at any level. It's just human beings what they are, you know.
Right, right.
We tend not to be that way. But yeah, so the funny thing is that the teacher and the student so often are like at cross purposes. And you're the whole point of being a teacher, I feel like, is trying to get the kid to be at the same purpose with mm-hmm. you. Not get them to be, sorry, that's the wrong word. Like
I will force them to obey.
It's like teaching them to want to learn so that when the next teacher comes, they're like, okay, I want to learn from this person.
Yes. Yes. You know? That makes sense. Have you given feedback before where you felt like it just fell on deaf ears and it was just like, you know, like you've done the thing before, you know, exactly. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, your feedback is correct. And uh-huh. someone just completely ignores it.
The best place
comes back to bite them.
The best place for this, the one I love for this is dating. As a married man now,
that's funny.
I see people who are dating, and I see, you know, guys will. I've been talking to single guys, and they'll say, I just feel like I should do this thing. All right, I feel like I've got to talk to her. I've got to send this text. I've got to make this phone call. Whatever it is, and every time I'm like, dude, don't do it. Like. Trust me. You don't need to say less, let, you know, give her space, like all these things. And, or like the other one is I think guys have a hard time with this. The non-apology apology.
Oh, I can't stand that one.
I think the biggest red flag for guys. This is like the thing that guys cannot figure out is like they know that they're right. Cause you know, they might've said something or done something and they didn't do anything wrong. But the way that the girlfriend received it was the wrong way, or that's the way that the guy perceives it. And so the guy always comes in with the apology of like, I'm sorry you feel this way. And it's like flag on the play, dude. Like, nope, you just,
like, you can't say it that way.
Can't say it that way. It's just gotta be, no, I'm just, I'm sorry, period. Just leave it. Don't touch it. And every time the guy goes back and it's like, I'm sorry that this is how you feel about it. I'm like, no. Then they come back to me and they're like, I don't know what happened. And I said, do you see, you know, did you say the thing I told you to say?
Do you see the problem here?
They're like, no, just didn't feel right. And I'm like, come on. How about you? Are there places where you see people running into brick walls when they don't need to?
I mean, oh yeah, I wouldn't. That happens at various levels. I've had opportunities to teach and opportunities to mentor young men a little bit. And I mean, yeah, I think the thing for me is sometimes you don't know how long it'll take for that feedback to come home.
Yeah.
And there's also just like, I think of Proverbs, right? The proverb of Don't talk to a fool in his folly, right? Because he's just going to keep doing what he's doing, right? Don't throw your pearls before swine. And I think there's a little bit of that going on sometimes. Like I have to bite my tongue because I'm like, okay, if I told this person what I thought they were doing wrong in the situation, like it's not going to do them any good. It's not going to do me any good.
Yeah.
So distinguishing between like almost who is worth giving feedback for sometimes, like holding that wisdom a little more precious, right? Because if I just walk around spouting off, hey, here's this thing I learned, right? Yeah. I become useless to all involved because now I'm not taking the time to take feedback for myself and I'm just kind of spouting, right? So that's something I think that's something to work on.
Yeah. One of my favorite movies is, I think I've probably talked about it on air before, but it's Glengarry Glen Ross. Sometime we should do an episode where we just talk about the life advice we've got from movies, and
you'd be the only one talking.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I guess that shows. Yeah, that shows where my feedback comes from. Maybe that's why I don't like feedback. I'm so used to like receiving it from the TV. You know, there's no like talking back and forth, and I'm just not used to that. Anyway,
I don't know. I've gotten some life advice from TV. I don't know if you can get feedback from a television show or from a movie.
I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't actually get feedback.
You just want life advice.
I just want life advice.
You can take into consideration and maybe do.
Basically, I just want like fortune cookies delivered to me every day about how I can live my life. That's give
funny.
Me the cookie and I'll take the cookie.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but there's this really great line from Glengarry Glen Ross where there's this guy played by Kevin Spacey who like tried to save this real estate deal and he didn't realize that, you know, he was saying the wrong thing and so he blew the deal because of what he said. And the Al Pacino character comes in and he says, "Do you know what the first rule is? You know it if you ever worked a day in your life. You never open your mouth till you know what the shot is." And I always love that line because I think even with advice, it's true where it's like, yeah, you don't open your mouth. Don't say anything until you know for a fact that this is something that needs to be said right now. Like it must be said. And you know, sometimes even then, like you got to hold on to that thing.
Banjo, maybe we should take that to heart. Our episodes would be about half as long. We're just sitting in silence until we like, here's what I know I must say. And we say it and then sit in silence.
That sounds like a really disturbing, like one of those falling asleep videos. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Now you're falling asleep with life advice from JJ and Banjo. And then it's just like a long pause. And then always make sure the iron is off.
That's so unsettling for some reason. All right.
Well, then that would be terrible. That one would be terrible though, because you would just constantly be waking up in the middle of the night. Did I leave the iron on?
Did I? Well, anyway, I've enjoyed this conversation more than I enjoyed practicing the actual challenge, considering how well it went for me. I think, kind of taking away from this, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a daily challenge out of this going forward. I think it's kind of a difficult, I don't know, implementing like a 15-minute thing into your life surrounding feedback. I don't know where that comes in. I do think for me coming out of this conversation, I need to be looking and more aware of where I can find feedback from the people in my life. Mm-hmm. So I could get daily feedback from my wife, I'm sure.
Do you not already?
I mean, I get you not like in the, hey, tell me exactly how I did on making the steak for you tonight. I don't know what it is. You get little bits of feedback here and there. And when it comes to larger pieces of my life, like I get feedback if she's, you know, coming to a, I don't know, if I have to give a presentation or something, or I don't know, she'll give me that feedback. Especially when I was in school, she came to a lot of my college stuff and she would say, oh, I think you did well here. I think you did well here. You know, here's where you can improve.
That's the funny thing about being married. I never had a test audience before for my material.
Now you have a test audience.
So now I'll go to a party and I'll do my bits. And then on the car ride back, the whole thing is just, I thought that joke didn't land quite right. You should wait
on
your timing.
That's funny.
That story didn't go the way I think you thought it did.
Yeah. So my feedback is less around my stories and my jokes, but more around like, hey, how'd that interaction go? And did like, especially if I go into the night with some goal or some purpose, I want to talk to someone specific.
Yeah.
And my wife will say, oh, here's what I thought about that.
And this is why you and I are different. You're focused on the business and I'm focused on the laughs. That's,
I don't know about business, but you know, that's the idea. Anyway, point being, I think there are other areas I could look for feedback, find some more specific mentors. That's something people talk about. Like yeah. I have men in my life I would consider mentors, but I should, I think seek them out more intentionally. But also I really enjoyed the feedback that, you know, I would consider, I would consider us to be peers and on similar level in terms of where we are in our life journey. Mm-hmm. So there's feedback to be gotten there as well, right? Like, I know the feedback you give me is not going to be quote unquote as qualified as someone that is much further along in the journey that we're on.
Right.
But it's still worth taking into account and taking into consideration. Oh, you learned this. Okay. Let's see what, let me try that, you know?
Yeah.
Let me try this.
And I think there's even value in getting feedback from people who are like not on your level in that sense. Like, cause sometimes they see things that you don't, you know?
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
And I've come across things where like, every once in a while, like a kid will give me a piece of feedback at school where I'm like, oh, that's a really good point. Like, I really like, that's something I really do need to work on. And when you think that you've mastered it, when you think that you're that much better than the people that you are over, there's a real stumbling block there. There's a real opportunity to just like miss a whole bunch of things.
100%. So I think it's
good, good to get feedback there too.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's a good place to end it. On to the next challenge. As a reminder, challenges last for 10 days. That's Monday through Friday for 2 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. And this next one is banjos introduction.
Yeah. So this week, getting into the whole idea of feedback, I was really intrigued by this comedian thing, the stand-up thing. I used to spend a lot of time listening to stand-up and watching comedians and kind of seeing that at play. And I've fallen away from it in the last year or two, maybe. But I've gotten back into it this week, and it made me realize that, like, we've been talking about craft and we've been talking about mastery and that kind of thing. And I personally have not seen an area that is more interested and interesting when it comes to craft and mastery than comedy. Like, the way that great stand-ups talk about jokes is like auto workers talking about cars, or like Swiss watchmakers talking about watches. It's fascinating to me. And I think there's something really interesting and worth looking at, no matter what your profession is taking time to study comedians and to study jokes and to study humor. So my challenge this week is take some time every day to understand a joke and to understand a comedian. That could look like a whole bunch of different things. There's a wealth of stand-up specials you can find on mm-hmm. any streaming platform or on YouTube. Go online, find YouTube compilations of any number of stand-ups. But I'd really recommend like finding a podcast about comedians or by comedians. You know, watching Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. You know, there's a famous saying that Mark Twain said, or it's attributed to Mark Twain, where he said, you know, the thing about analyzing comedy is like dissecting a frog. Nobody learns anything and the frog dies.
that's a good quote.
It's a great quote.
I like it.
But I think it's almost like, you know, we spend time talking about, you and I, JJ, we talk about, oh, well, people should read poetry. Because the thing about poetry is you learn this economy of language and you learn how to speak beautifully and you learn how to put sentences together. Comedy's the same way. You've got to figure out how a joke works. You got to use the smallest number of words to get the laugh, right? And there's certain words. This is amazing to me. There are certain words that are funnier than other words. Like, people laugh at certain things more than they laugh at others. And how does that work? And obviously, this looks like one of those things where it's like Banjo has a like pet peeve that he's on this week. And a little bit it is.
Not pet peeve, pet project.
Pet project. All right, pet project.
If it was a pet peeve, we wouldn't be doing a Banjo. Language, Banjo. Language.
Precision of. Yes. Oh, or Wodehouse. Oh my gosh. Please. If you have not,
Wodehouse is incredible.
If you have not read P.G. Wodehouse, please do yourself a favor. Again, I said a couple weeks ago, like, I this is not a statement of judgment. This is like, oh, I'm so excited for you. If you haven't read P.G. Wodehouse, please stop listening to this podcast right now. Go on Amazon and buy a copy of The Inimitable Jeeves. or thank you, Jeeves, or right ho, Jeeves, any of those.
Any of the Jeeves.
Any of the Jeeves. Because I can't think of somebody who's a better comic mind than P.G. Wodehouse. Anyway, part of the reason why I think this is worth doing and why I think we should spend time on it is A, I find that I get too self-serious on this show, and I'm trying to snap out of that. So that's one. Two, I think if there's one thing that Christian men, as we get older, start to lose, it's our sense of humor. And I don't think there's a biblical reason for that. And I think there's something that's a little bit, you're giving me a look like I'm wrong. But
well, I'm just saying I can think of some Christian men that the humor has only aged gloriously.
Many of them have. Many of them have. And I'm not saying that it's like inevitable. But I have noticed that some Christian men don't have a sense of humor. And I think a sense of humor is critical for enjoying life and for being a good leader. Like the best leaders that I've worked under have an excellent sense of humor. And the worst leaders I've worked under have no sense of humor. And I think there's just something really worthwhile about spending time and understanding how humor works and why it's valuable. And much like poetry, it's not, or art, you know, it's not random. It's not like, it's not just like splashes of color. Like there's a system to it. There's a way it works and it's beautiful. And God has a sense of humor. I mean, look at the platypus.
Classic line and always funny.
So that's my challenge. Spend time studying comedy this week.
Humor and comedy. Good stuff.
This has been the Forging Honor podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com. If you enjoy the show, make sure to like, subscribe, and give us a rating to bring others into the Forging Honor journey.
On our website, you'll find information on how to do the challenges alongside us, as well as links to the many resources we mentioned in the show.
And we do make a small amount from any purchases you make through our website links, so thank you in advance.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of forging honor. We'll see you next time.